Last week, we focused on the finance and stewardship team. And for that theme, we really did focus more on the finance side of things, the money side of things. Today, as we move on to think about the maintenance and eco team, there is actually an element of crossover between these two teams because both are, in a sense, responsible for stewardship, if we understand stewardship to mean looking after the things that we have. But also, as we explore the themes behind the maintenance and eco team today, we'll see that this stewardship is not just simply about looking after the material things of our congregation, like the building, but actually it invites us to ask the question, why should we as a church and why should we as Christians care about the environment and the planet? So we're going to start just by exploring, first of all, this idea of stewarding and maintaining what God has given us. And we're very, very briefly just going to look at another passage in the Bible from Matthew chapter 25. This is a parable that Jesus told. It's the parable of the bags of gold. And what we read in this passage is that a manager, a boss, goes away and he leaves three servants in charge of varying quantities of gold, one with five bags of gold, one with three, and one with one. And then the man returns because he wants to see how his servants have put the money that he gave him to use. And picking up from verse 21, not quite, from verse 20, we read that the man who had received five bags of gold brought in another five bags of gold. "Master," he said, "you entrusted with me five bags of gold. See, I have gained five more." His master replied, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share in your master's happiness." And the same thing happens to the man who was given two bags of gold. He returns with another two bags of gold and receives the same praise. "Well done, my good and faithful servant." But then in verse 24, Jesus says that the man who had received one bag of gold came. "Master," he said, "I knew that you are a hard man, harvesting where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. So I was afraid and went out and hid your gold in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you." His master replied, "You wicked, lazy servant. So you knew that I harvest where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed. Well then, you should have put money on deposit with the banker so that when I returned, I would have received it back with interest. So take the bag of gold from him and give it to the one who has 10 bags. For whoever has will be given more, and they will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what they have will be taken from them. And throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." So what does that parable of Jesus have to say to us about stewarding or maintaining what God has given us? Well, first of all, it reminds us that what we have is given to us by God. Each of the three servants received the bags of gold from his master. Without the master, they would not have had anything. Incidentally, the traditional telling of that story is that it wasn't bags of gold they were given, it was bags of talents. And a talent was something like 15 months of wages, I think it was. Sorry, 15 years of wages. That's how much wealth there was in a single talent. And the use of talent in this story is actually the root of where we get our English word talent to mean good at something. So the talent in the story, the bag of gold in the story, it can represent a great many things. The most common understanding of the bags of gold is that it is the gospel or the kingdom of God that God gives to his people to go and to spread it and to share it among people so that there will be some kind of growth in gospel belief and in his kingdom. It's why the servant that didn't take that message out was so severely punished. The talents can also be understood as our gifts, the things that we are good at, that God has enabled us to do, that we are to put to use in his service. So if we are good at a particular task or activity, the implication of this story is that God, having given us that gift, we are to go and use it. At a stretch, and I admit that it is a stretch, it is possible that the talent could also represent the material things with which God has blessed us. That is stretching it a little, I admit that. But it's possible to interpret it in that way so that we can approach this parable and say that everything that we have, whether it be the gospel message, whether it be the things that we are good at, or whether it even be the things that we have, are given to us by God as his way of blessing us and showing his blessing to us. From this parable Jesus has told, we also see very clearly that God calls us to put what we have to work. So if he has given us the gospel message, we are to invest that or put it to work by going and telling other people the good news of Jesus Christ, the good news of forgiveness of sin and all of these things. If it's an understanding of gifting that we have with this story, then it's put your skills to use for God. Find ways in which you can serve him by doing the things that you are good at. Or if we take that final meaning of the things that we have, then we are to put that to work for God as well. It's why it is important that we who are blessed with such a facility as this make sure that it is open to people to come and to use. Because God has asked, and no, God has commanded us as his people to put what we have to work for him. And that is part of stewarding and maintaining, putting what we have to work for God, to further his mission, to further the building of his kingdom. And we do so for the glory of God and the building of his kingdom. We are to care for the things that God has given us because we don't want them in any way to become unusable by him. That would be pretty difficult because we know from the Bible that God is able to use even the most evil of circumstances for his good. But if God has given us something, whether it be the story of the gospel, whether it be our gifts, whether it be material possessions, if God has given us these things and we are to use them, then we are to look after them so that they will always be at their best when God requires them. But not at the expense of the building of his kingdom or for his glory. So, and again, seeing as we are sitting in it, we could use the building as an example. We could say, well, God has blessed us, truly blessed us, with an incredible space to gather together. And if we want to keep this space nice for him, the easiest thing we could do is actually not let anyone in. We used to say that, I used to work in W.H. Smith, and we always used to say that the shop would be so much tidier were it not for the customers that kept coming in. But it's the same principle with this building as well. We could keep it pristine, but we wouldn't be doing that for the glory of God, because God's glory is to say, use the space you've been given as a place of welcome for people. And so we always have to have this sort of balancing act. But always, I think, to be on the safe side, if we are having to balance between looking after what God has given us and using it for his glory, then the scale should always be tipped toward using it for his glory. Because that's the primary calling of God to his people. Use what you have for me and my glory, for the building of my kingdom. And that is an element of what stewardship and maintenance is all about. Having that balance, we need to look after the things that God has given us, but we always need to make sure that we use them for His glory and the building of His kingdom. And if we are ever in any danger of the scales tipping too far in one direction, let us make sure that it always tips toward using something for God's glory than keeping something pristine. So that is the balancing act of stewardship and maintenance. It's something that the finance and stewardship team are to keep an eye on in terms of finance, and the maintenance team in terms of the buildings with which God has blessed us. But that's only half of what the maintenance and eco team are responsible for, because we also have this bit tagged on about eco, which is short for ecology. Why should Christians care about the environment? And I just want to share with you, first of all, a few statistics that I hope will kind of highlight for you that our environment is actually not in a good place right now. I apologize for the smallness of the text on this PowerPoint slide, but let me read to you these statistics. 12 million tons of plastic end up in the oceans each year. Only 9% of all plastic waste has ever been recycled. That's from the moment plastic was invented till now. Only 9% of all plastics have ever been recycled. Around 700 marine species are impacted negatively by plastic. 1 million plastic bottles are bought worldwide every minute. 100,000 bits of plastic end up in the ocean after your shower, depending on the kind of product that you use when you are showering. And 9 billion, the last one's a positive one, 9 billion fewer plastic bags have been bought in England after the 5p charge was brought in. Plastic is a scourge in our world. It is so handy. It is so useful. But it will outlive me. And no disrespect to any of you sitting here, I'm younger than you are. And the plastic that we have today is going to outlast me. That is a frightening thought. There was some research done in the last few weeks. Scientists collected samples of British mussels from various places around our coastline and tested them. And in 100% of the mussels tested, i.e. all of them, they found at least 70 micrograms of plastic in the mussels. Pollution of our oceans is so bad that plastic is actually now starting to get into our food chain. And there's a chance that the plastic that we are throwing away, we are beginning to consume. And in response to the issue of plastic in our oceans, there was recently an article published that Ruth showed me, where someone has developed a microorganism that, if released into the oceans, would actually start to eat plastic. And the idea is, well, isn't this brilliant? We've got a way of dealing with the issue of plastic pollution. We can release an organism and that will destroy the plastic. And my response was, so what you're saying is that rather than change our lifestyle to become less dependent on plastic, what instead we'll do is release a microorganism into our oceans, which, yes, will destroy plastic, but who knows what untold impact this will have. It's indicative of me of where we as a race are at the moment. We would rather potentially cause more damage than actually change how we live. So that's one issue. There is the issue of plastic. This is something that Ruth and I have been trying to do, although we've taken it one step further. Eating one meat-free meal per week. So let's say instead of Sunday roast this afternoon, you were to have cheesy pasta, because there shouldn't be any meat in cheesy pasta. If you're putting meat in your cheesy pasta, what are you doing? Eating one meat-free meal per week would reduce CO2 emissions the equivalent of driving round the world 2,438 times. It would save worldwide 885 million calories and 48 tons of fat, which is the weight of 3.5 Big Bens. It would save 5,700 acres of land, equivalent of 89,000 tennis courts, and it would reduce water usage by 13 million tons, the equivalent of 5,000 Olympic swimming pools. Ruth and I, being aware of just the impact of the meat industry, decided that what we do as a couple is that on a Monday to Friday, if we are cooking for ourselves, we will eat a vegetarian meal, and we will have meat at the weekends as a kind of treat. And if you go back into the kinds of diet that you read in the Bible, that was common. They would survive primarily on grain and on bread and on essentially a vegetarian diet. They would eat meat, certainly. And I'm not for a moment suggesting we all convert to vegetarians or become vegans or anything like that, because, well, at times I do believe God created animals so that we can enjoy them, and that includes eating them. But there is a principle that having a meat-based diet is not just bad for our health, it is bad for the planet. Meat was a special treat in the Bible. It was only ever consumed for a big celebration, or when something really remarkable had happened and they wanted a special meal to celebrate. It wasn't the staple that it has become today. And so actually reducing our meat intake not only will help our health, but it will also help our planet. And I've used this infographic before, and it's the last statistic I want to share with you, but it's the how many Earths would we need if we lived like a given country. And this is from 2016. Apparently, Australia is at the worst. If we all lived like Australians do, we would need the equivalent of 5.4 planet Earths. The UK is marginally better, but we're still at 2.9. Basically, the consumption in the UK is three times what the planet can provide. But when you take into account the whole world, we're currently at around 1.6 planet Earths, which I dare say you can probably figure out is unsustainable, because we don't have 1.6 Earths to consume. We have one. We are over-consuming, so eventually at some point, because of our over-consumption, the resources that we have will run out, because they are not replenishing themselves at the same rate as we are consuming them. So those are some statistics, but what is the point? Why should Christians care about the planet? Why should we care as a church about ecological things? Well, one of the conversations that I once had with Graham McMeekin, who was the chap from Tear Fund, we went to Rwanda together. He asked the question, why is it easier to convince individuals or families to make small changes for the good of the environment, but it is notoriously difficult to convince churches corporately to do the same? And honestly, I don't know the answer to that, because as I hope to show you from this passage in Genesis 1, Christians and the church should be at the forefront of looking after the planet. Why? First of all, because overconsumption of our planet is based on human selfishness. Now, we have a word for human selfishness in the church. Sin. At its heart, sin is selfishness. Sin is saying, I reject God for myself. I choose me over everything and anyone else. That is sin. And the whole story of our faith is God dealing with sin, of God recognizing that humanity cannot deal with sin on its own, so he comes as Jesus Christ. He shows us what it is to live the sinless life. Despite that, he is put to death on the cross. In that moment, he takes the punishment that we deserved for our selfishness and sinfulness. He then rises to new life as a promise of God to say, you who recognize your sinfulness and your need of Jesus, there is new life to be had in the resurrection. So if we recognize human selfishness as sin, then we should be at the forefront of saying we will not act in that way. Because we, despite still being sinful and living in a sinful world, we are doing our best to live God's way, not our way. And that is the first reason why I think the church should be at the forefront of looking after the planet. Because not looking after the planet is the result of sin. Why would we want to be party to sinful behavior? Secondly, better stewardship of our environment, our planet, will help the most vulnerable in our world. It is common that when people are being exploited, it is the most vulnerable who suffer first. They suffer because either they're exploited to meet our consuming demands, or they suffer because they do not have the resources to protect themselves from any kind of ecological hardship. And as we have seen many times in the Bible, God cares about the poor and the oppressed. He cares about the most vulnerable. And yes, there is a sense that anyone who has suffered injustice and anyone who has been oppressed or has been exploited, they will receive ultimate justice when Christ returns. When God comes to complete the work that he started in Jesus Christ and that is currently ongoing in our world. But remember the words that Jesus said to his disciples, go into the world, make disciples of all nations. In other words, he said to his disciples, I started the mission, you've got to keep it going until I come back. And part of that mission is to ensure that we are doing what we can to support and love the most vulnerable in our world. And if that means making changes to how we treat our environment, then so be it. Because God is on the side of those who are the most vulnerable. And he desires that we as his people do the same. We should also consider future generations while still believing in Christ's return. One of the common arguments made for Christians not caring about the planet is, well, oh, Jesus is going to come back. And when Jesus returns, we're told that God will give to us a new heaven and a new earth. So if he's going to give us a new earth, then, well, why don't we just mistreat the one that we have? Because what does it matter? We'll get a new one anyway. The trouble with that is that that assumes that Jesus will return before our planet reaches a point where it can no longer sustain us. And he will, because God is gracious, but let's not put him to the test, okay? Let's not have an attitude of how far can we push this before God has to intervene. We don't know when Christ will return. He could return this afternoon. He could return in 1,000 years' time. And if he returns in 1,000 years' time, that's quite a lot of generations of people are still going to need this planet. And therefore, we in the present have a responsibility to ensure that future generations are able to still live and work in this world, telling people the gospel of Jesus Christ before he eventually does come back. Because we don't know how long that will be. And so there is a sense that while we do trust and believe that one day at the right time Christ will return, we don't know when that is. And so we cannot take for granted that we can do what we want on this planet until that point. But if you remain unconvinced, if you've listened to these arguments about why we should care for the earth and you think, well, nah, I don't buy it, then there's one final thing I will say, and this is the final word on the matter, because there is no argument with this. God has commanded us to look after this planet. And that's what we heard in Genesis chapter 1. In verse 27, we read about how humanity is made unique in all creation. We alone are made in God's image, reflecting him more than anything else. And part of that uniqueness, in verse 28, God says to humanity, fill the earth, subdue it, and rule over it. I've said before that there are times in the Bible where a command of God in the Old Testament is given new light in the New Testament. So, for example, in the Old Testament, we read all about the animal sacrifices that were to be made in order to atone for sin. And we know that today we don't need to continue that practice because of the atoning sacrifice of Jesus Christ. And we rely on that once and final sacrifice. Although knowing about the old sacrificial system from the Old Testament helps us to understand what was going on at the cross. At no point in Scripture does God ever lift or change the command to humanity to rule over this planet. At no point in the rest of the Bible does God ever say, you are no longer responsible for stewarding the creation that I have given you. And the reason that God does not lift or change that command is because it is still in place to this very day. We are the stewards of creation. God has given us the unique privilege of looking after the earth that he gave us. You could say that we are supposed to be caretakers of planet Earth. But thinking about this on a very human level, you would not continue to employ a caretaker if they continued to destroy the thing that they're supposed to be taking care of. Now, God is more loving and gracious than that, and certainly none of us have received our P60 to say that our time as caretakers of this world is over. But we need to take seriously the fact that God has given us a command. Rule over this earth. You are the stewards. You are the caretakers. I am giving you the responsibility of looking after this planet. And so if nothing else has convinced you, then as a follower of God, it is as simple as this. God has commanded you to look after his earth. So obey him. If the stats don't move you, let the command of God move you. Look after my planet, God says to us. The maintenance and eco team. It is partly involved in the task of stewardship, looking after the resources we have and ensuring that they are used to their best and for the glory of God. They're also tasked with encouraging us as a congregation to think ecologically and lead the way in looking after the planet which God has given us. But as with all these themes, it is not just the team's responsibility to do these things. It is the responsibility of every Christian to steward what resources they have by using them in God's service, and it is the responsibility of every Christian to play their part in looking after the planet. Why? Well, partly because God gave us this planet, and therefore we should look after it, but more importantly, because God has commanded us to look after this planet, and we ought to obey him. And so may God help us find ways to better care for his creation and to lead the way in looking after planet Earth. Amen.